That's composer, singer, multi-instrumentalist, and band leader Hugh Masekela with Timlela. It's from his 2002 album, Time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and much talking we are going to do today, with today being just 16 days from D-Day. And D-Day, as you know, is Election Day. So we're going to be talking about what your state of mind is. You know, we do this all the time, just to check and see where you are in the scheme of things, what's actually having effect or impact on your mind as you contemplate your choices. How are you likely to vote? If you're likely to vote, how media coverage might have shaped your views since the last time we talked about this, your views and your decisions. And particular attention to how third parties and independent movements you think will fare at the polls come Election Day. So we're going to be doing a lot of talking at 888-874-4888. Before I get to the phones, and I'll do that almost immediately, just want to say there is a lot of information that's going to be coming your way in the next few days, broadcasting days, due to the overwhelming number of emails that have been dumped by WikiLeaks, and they are mind-blowing. And they prove, or give reason for us to believe, that they prove a lot of what we've been talking about here, about the crookedness, the absolute lawlessness of the Clinton Foundation, and the fact that this was run as literally a criminal enterprise. And you see how people staked out their own little fiefdoms, their own little areas of business for themselves, and nobody trusted the others. It's just an amazing sight, really, when you read through these, and it's a lot of reading to do, But we will get to the substance, the most important things, as soon as we are able to cull through the latest batch of emails that WikiLeaks has put into the public eye. So that's going to happen. But I want to return to the conversation that we had started last week and having to do with what the stark choices are now. And dealing with this word reckoning, this is, I think, a time for reckoning on a personal level, on a group or community level, on a national level. We have to come to terms with certain things because, as I said, the future is going to be coming at us at 100 miles an hour, and it does not look all that encouraging. This is a really bizarre election, but the good side, if we can say that, is that there is no doubt, based on what we have been witnessing, there is no doubt as to what the system is made of. Now, anybody daring to suggest that, you know, this is just the exception, or this is just a mild hiccup in an otherwise, you know, reasonably good system, you really have to take a look at this. This didn't get this way overnight. And it seems as all parts of the system are failing and have failed terribly. But we should also see that as a natural consequence of what the system is. This is what it does. This is how it behaves. I'm more concerned about our understanding of how the system works. I'm more concerned about what our counter is. For example, I mean, it's inevitable that we're going to see third parties. The Libertarian Party is actually being forecast as losing support, even more so than was expected. The Green Party is not going to gain a lot of ground this time around. And you begin, in hindsight, you put things together, and you see how logical it was at the time when you and others were saying, look, why not have a kind of coalition effort here? Put your forces together. And this way, you're not divided. The whole progress would be shared, and you will make a dent. You're more unified than if you were to go it alone, especially after Bernie Sanders capitulated and betrayed his movement. That was the time to get certain things done. The folks haven't done that. They have been unwilling to fire the leader. They have been unwilling to signal that this is serious business to them, and they're not going to be used. They're not going to just sitting there as idle ducks, and now totally lost and totally open to the marauders. This is a very unfortunate situation that we're in. But at the same time, I've got to say, we saw it coming. We saw it coming. So in this period when we're talking about things like reckoning, what is the reckoning that is to be done here? What is the reckoning? We know we can't tolerate the Republican Party. We can't tolerate the Democratic Party. We just can't tolerate this level of operating. What, therefore, is the alternative? And why do we come to the inevitable when we saw the writing on the wall? We saw the writing on the wall quite a while ago. And yet, we are exactly where this system predicted and knowingly could predict where we would end up being. So these are some of the things up for discussion today. Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. What are your feelings at this moment as we enter the really last couple of yards of this race? How is it affecting you, and how is it affecting the choice that you will make, whatever that choice is? But also, we want to talk about third parties. What is it that third parties need to do based on what we have witnessed? This is very important. I'll tell you why it's important. It suggests a certain kind of political maturity. I could understand you're out, in the major races for the first time, maybe the second or third time. But actually, you have history. You have political history as a ready reference point. You have supposedly an understanding of how the system works, what its objectives are. And the first objective is to maintain the status quo. I mean, that's what it is. And here we are. It has come to that. They have seen it their duty to just dismiss all the other possible contenders and essentially maintain this as a two-party contest. It is riddled with corruption, all kinds of ways of basically ruining the so-called theory of democracy. The people who have different views are not part of this process. We have the media becoming totally, it was so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. But all of that is emotional talk. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. What do we see happening? What is the reckoning that we have to do individually and collectively at this moment? The election will come, and we will see the results and so forth, and we will be back at square one. Do we have to repeat this process over and over and over again? Do we not have some understanding that we, as independent thinkers, we should be moving in an entirely different way? This system should actually be fearful of people putting their power, their units of power together to face it down. And there's a very good possibility that that could happen. But we see a reluctance to do what you have to do. You know, this is politics, and there's a reason they call it a political science. There's a way, a methodology in which things work. Whether you like it or not, whether we approve of it or not, there is a way that this situation works, this system works. Well, I think by now we should be able to demonstrate that we understand that system. And we have developed countermeasures to succeed at our program, our vision, getting an entirely different mindset in play where people can see the possibility of getting out of this horrible, what Donald Trump has called the swamp of politics. Why are we repeating bad decisions? Why are we going down the same road expecting that we will get a different result? I don't understand it. So maybe you need to help me today. Maybe I'm the one needing a lot of help here, because for the life of me, I can't understand it. You run first time, run second time, run third time, whatever. But look, in terms of running, people have, I would consider them seasoned political parties by now. You have things that you can study. You have a track record to study. You have the system that you can definitely decode and analyze as to what it is you ought to do. But you can't get a different result adapting to their rules and their ways of doing things. They know why they're doing things their way, because they win. We have to find entirely different formulas for winning. And we should not feel uncomfortable about the idea of winning. This is the thing. You ought to be very comfortable about it and aggressive about winning. We have to mature politically in this sense, because it seems as if we are content just to say that, well, we ran in the race and we didn't do as well as expected, but we did run and we did get a couple of votes. That no longer suffices. You got to show growth. You have to show progress. You can't run anymore with the idea that inevitably failure or loss will be acceptable. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I don't buy the argument that because you're small, you are therefore given a pass at failure. I don't buy that at all. Don't. Now, some people may be looking at this whole thing from the point of view, of the mathematical point of view, of the number five, or let's say, well, we're running for the fifth time. Okay, you're running for the fifth time. And that is supposed to build in an argument, well, you know, you're likely not to succeed because you're not as seasoned as the other parties. Well, you know you're not as seasoned from the word go. But it's not the number five that I concentrate on. It's five times five. A fifth presidential run means that at minimum 20 years have gone by. And certainly, for being around, let's say, for 20 years, we've got to see something other than what we know will be the threshold of failure. And this certainly by now should cause some very deep thinking and analysis. If it looks like it's going down the same road, well, you have to switch up your approach. I know that Jill Stein, at least this is what she had said, that she had reached out to Bernie Sanders early in the game and essentially was rebuffed. The idea being, hey, how could we work together and form a more massive coalition that could, you know, do exactly what it is I'm describing, which is to move ahead. She got supposedly no response there. Well, the other flip side of that coin is when Sanders betrayed his movement, nobody took the initiative, it seemed, to pick up from where he left off. Simply because he isn't talking to Jill Stein doesn't mean that you can't talk to Jill Stein or the Libertarian Party or some other party to amass a greater presence in the political arena. But they're not acting like they have special knowledge of politics. They're not acting as if they understand that you don't have to be pure. You know, it's not one of those things to test your purity, your political purity. It is also about having a plan to win. There's nothing wrong about wanting to win. If you don't want to win, don't run. Don't start this process. There's nothing negative about wanting to win. But as I said, repeated losses, and we see the result of this, repeated losses become an anesthetic. It numbs people. Because from the word go, they expect, they anticipate failure, they anticipate losing. And they also anticipate that it is okay to lose, and to lose as devastatingly as they will. There's no reason for it, in my view. All right, 888-874-4888. From Wisconsin, Habu, you're on the air.
Good day to you, Ms. Lead, and always nice to listen to you and your
Thank
sage
you.
Ways.
Thank you
sage
so much.
Words.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a little rainy, but it's fall, so that's par for this part of the world. And how are you?
I'm hanging in.
Okay.
As we all are.
You know, I will tell you what I think of it, but I can't answer it directly because I am quite stumped by your question. But let me just do an end around, because this, I think there's a I see some collateral damage coming out from this campaign, and let me explain what it is. You know, when Trump uttered those very lewd and unbecoming words about a woman and what he usually does, that, in my opinion, as odious as it was private conversation. And private conversation is not up for, you know, handing over to the court of public opinion. Private conversation is private conversation. But what has been hijacked is now, because it was so outrageous, now it seems like it is fair to dig into people's lives. And now with, you know, the kinds of devices we have, you know, these phones that can record what is going on. People are going to be doing this surreptitiously and then blackmailing people. And, you know, the whole spontaneity of life is going to be, in a way, taken away. You never know what's going to be saying. You'll be guarded. And so now this is almost becoming normalized that, oh, this person said this. You know, God knows we've all said horrible things. And if it's in private conversation, it's, you know, it's between the people engaged in that conversation, not for the rest to decide. Now, had Trump said that publicly, then that's fair game. But this is really going to intrude upon the privacy of society if this is let to stand.
Well, the thing is that people actually assume that we have privacy, and we don't. An assumption of privacy, and really when you look at the application of the law, you see how arbitrary it is applied. Trump, in this case, had no privacy because the material was so salacious and it was so potentially damaging to his campaign that it became instantly useful and therefore legal. People make up the rules.
Right, and I don't disagree with you, but this, by the way, this happened a couple of years ago when the owner of the NBA team, Los Angeles Clippers, was saying some horrible things to his mistress, and she recorded them and then let them out, you know, played them publicly, and then he was kind of really ridiculed and made to kind of sell his team, really. So this is where we're going with this. We're all going to be subject to this kind of blackmail. It has to be stopped. Now I realize that this is a campaign and people use anything and everything that they can dig up on people. But we've got to be very clear about not letting this become the norm, because now it's so easy to do it and not ever accept. Now, it's not a legal matter. I suppose, you know, people could take it to court and demand compensation for this kind of defamation of character, but this is a very important thing, I believe, if we want to be able to talk to people in a, and of course I'm not talking to just ordinary people, but talking among people where it's not things can't happen in this manner. So I'll stop there. But if you have any words to add to it, I just have one more thing to add, which is separate.
Well, let's go with what you have to add.
Oh, yeah. You just one more thing. You know, as odious as Trump is, and he really is, he relishes putting down women and other people, but especially if they don't meet his idea of beauty, which of course he's entitled to, but in a public way, talking about Rosie O'Donnell or whatever, it shows me what a little of a man he is. He really is a little thing. That's not to say the other person is any better. And in many ways, it shows how American society is so ignorant of the call. When somebody talks about killing Gaddafi, we came, we saw, he died, ha 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 ha. And, you know, there's no even scrutiny of that. But no. When somebody says something so boorish as this person has, as Trump has, and then take that as far as they can go with it, it just shows you how we've lost, a sense of priority.
Well, we haven't just lost a sense of priority. We've lost a sense of mission in the media, for example. The media, to me, has no defense at all against an accusation that it has become totally compromised in the way it has chosen to behave in this election. Generally speaking, the media's reporting and lack of reporting is just disgraceful. And it's so clear that they're manipulating and they're part of the process of manipulating the broader opinion. The newsroom is being run by the advertising department and the suits upstairs. There used to be a time when you could trust that the editors or the gatekeepers of news had the qualifications and the judgment about what news is, irrespective of what people want it to be. People may want to hear more and more about the salacious stuff. And by the way, compared to Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton's mouth is putrid. You haven't heard a word about that. Hillary Clinton's conduct, personal conduct, has been so outrageous, but you haven't heard a word about that because the media people have decided, based on the amount of money. Remember when we started this conversation, I said this year, as you we monitor the election, keep in mind that we're talking about the most expensive election in U.S. history, more than $5 billion alone on advertising. And the deal is very simple. These media corporations, this is how they make money, apart from, say, the Olympics and the Super Bowl. This is one of the big money earners for them. So they're being very careful not to interrupt the flow of money. And then we see also beyond that, they've crossed a line in that many of the media organizations are themselves full-fledged partners in the shenanigans that they should be reporting about. So there ought to be a referendum, a reckoning, if you will, about media too. The media just disgraceful. You wonder, is there anybody there who went to journalism school in the newsroom? Is there any editor who knows what a news story is and what a news story isn't? And we are also seeing, and this is part of the oligarchy that we are witnessing, the people in media. I mean, when Anderson Cooper sits down to ask Donald Trump a question or Hillary Clinton a question, it's one multi-million dollar corporation speaking to another multi-million dollar corporation. Anderson Cooper is quite wealthy. Most of these anchors are millionaires. They get paid very, very well. They have been bought, and they are very comfortable with the compromise they have made. But as an institution, because this thing has infected the newsrooms of major newspapers, it used to be you could depend for on an independent assessment of where we are because of good reporting. That is dead in the water. The ironic thing is that we have gotten more useful reporting from so-called conservative or right-of-center publications and news outlets. The mainstream media had just been total tools of propaganda, and they relished it, it seems to me. They liked it. You know, while they're busy avoiding covering the news, they're making it up. They're part of the story. They love it. So a lot has happened here, and we will have to decide, a part of the list of things we have to do, which news organizations are no longer to be seen as credible avenues of information, and dump them and keep moving on. Do not, if you've had enough time over the course of this campaign to evaluate the quality of reporting, you see where the compromises have been made. You see where the media have just been total sycophants of whoever pays them the most. You have no use for that. So you stop supporting that media or those media outlets, and you develop new habits of getting your information. Thanks, Habu, for your call today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. This is our continuing discussion on the reckoning that we have to do. Too much is out of order. And we are also compounding the problem by giving free passes because we think, well, we don't want to beat up on so-called progressive movements. No, it's a time to reckon with them too, because we are going down the same cycle, yet another election season, with the same result, the same disappointing result. It means that somebody's not thinking, or they're not thinking right. We've got to make some changes here. Desiree from New York, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, hi.
Yes.
Hi, how are you, Yatrice?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing okay, I guess, hanging in there, like you said. I wanted to say that to go to the caller before me, I feel like not only is the media compromised, I mean, I think the whole system in what we need is compromise. I mean, I was listening to the Progressive Hour yesterday, and I've heard a couple of, you know, things along the lines of what was said yesterday. And I think, oh, to answer your question, I'm not going to be, I won't be voting. I think it's important for people to ask, what is really important? Do I really care that this man made an obscene remark? Everybody makes obscene remarks. I make a lot of obscene remarks, but it's the quality. And I want to say that I've kind of moved, and I'm not really focused. I'm not really focused on what's going on politically now, but my kind of idea has changed into I don't want to support a corporate government, which is what I think this is now. And I want to more so focus on gathering groups of people in this country together with a common goal, which would be to not have a form of government, but somehow, some way, organize something in this country that also is connected to all other countries around the world, and bringing people who have this one idea. We don't want any more wars. We just want peace, and we want to be able to live healthy, happy, meaningful lives where we are in control of the decisions that we make in our families and how we live.
Well, that sounds great. However, it also sounds utopian. And by that I mean, how does that picture, and it's important to have a picture, which you have, how does that picture fit into the reality that we are experiencing? How likely is that to happen? And if it is to happen, how long would it take? What would it take? My point is, let's deal with the reality that we know, or from the point of view that we know. And we have to, part of the reality is also to understand that we cannot accomplish everything at once. It's just not going to happen. But what would you say are the main points? I mean, I'm not asking you to respond now. I'm just saying in a theoretical sense, these are the questions we have to ask. What can we accomplish successfully within a reasonable amount of time? What can we do? And what do we have to do in order to achieve these modest goals, considering the reality that change, unless, you know, people are picking up arms and, you know, running down to City Hall with their spades and shovels to overthrow a government. But within the context and confines of what we understand our system of government to be, and within the limitations that we know exist, what can we reasonably accomplish with success? That's my point. You could be small, a small effort, But if you achieve the goals that you set out to achieve, you have achieved spectacular success. And it is important to be able to succeed at something, because that is what inspires people. That is what gives people, you know, the added incentive to, you know, go the longer distance. But if we don't see movement within a reasonable amount of time, 20 years is enough time to be able to move beyond the 3% mark or 2% mark of the vote. And we shouldn't be comfortable with the idea that if it's not happening, it's because the system is, you know that going in. My question is, what are we doing to adopt a new way of thinking and therefore a new way of dealing with each other and putting things together that would represent at least movement in the right direction, and we are accomplishing things. Look, this thing with Bernie Sanders really burns me up, because the potential for success was so palpable. It was right within reach. But the people didn't understand what they were supposed to do. And the first thing you're supposed to do is to protect your investment. If Sanders messed up, just throw him overboard and say, sorry, we invested in you. We thought that you were going to be a spectacular leader. We thank you for bringing us along and being the face of this movement. But you betrayed our movement. And now we have to move away from you. We got to dump you. And we have to go someplace else. And begin talks immediately with the Green Party or any other party with which you feel compatible or reasonably compatible, and you work out a system where at least if only for this election, maybe it would only last for this election, but come up with something that moves outside of the predicted end.
I had gotten in contact with someone from the Sanders campaign after he had said, you know, just it's not going to happen, and you know, everybody votes for Hillary. And I expressed that idea, and they said, oh no, we're not going to fire him, but we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. And I stayed in contact with that Facebook page, and they're all, you know, voting for Hillary. Now, the what's it called, millennials, make up, I think there's 88 or 80 million of millennials. And if that is the case, and they really are really pro for that idea, I think you've mentioned it, or maybe Gary Nolan mentioned it. They're just quiet. They're not really saying anything. I'm saying something, but I'm only saying it on these stories. Outside of this, I don't really speak any political ideas, but they all kind of fall along the lines of, well, I don't want war. I don't want any of these two candidates. I would have voted for Bernie, but I mean, there has to be a way to initiate a type of some sort of, to get the word out there. That's all I'm saying. I think everybody who calls, we all have these great ideas. And if we just had, like, if there was a lead stories America or a lead America hotline, we could all call in, and then we could all just say, hey, you know what, every Tallahassee, New York, California, everybody at 8 p.m. on Friday on November whatever, stand outside, don't do a thing, or go, and you're all going to vote this, or we're not going to take the transit system, or we're not going to do something. But there has to be a way to get everyone to get the idea out there. This is what we'd like to have happen. This is what we stand for. Whoever wants to do this as well, send me a link or contact this page or follow here, and just keep on the lookout for more information. Okay, I'm going to let the next person go.
Thank you very much for your call, Desiree, and for offering your ideas. Washington, D.C., Paul, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
Hi. I actually have a two-part question, and mine is just simply this. Because of what we're seeing or not seeing with the Green Party, should we do the same thing to, with, you know, should we do the same thing with the Green Party that you're talking about with regards to Bernie? Should we, in fact, dump the Green Party and try to build another alternative?
No, I don't think so. Here's the thing. The Green Party, with everything said, the Green Party at least has shown stamina. You know, it has some good ideas. It has a structure. It has a way of operating. It needs, however, to get serious about being scientific about it so that you know what you're after. You tell people, you have to educate people about how they can help themselves through movements. But the movement has to have some solid direction. It has to know what it's doing. Look, Bernie Sanders got 13 million votes. This is nothing to be sneezed. This is nothing short of a miracle, all right? Given the fact it was a spit and chewing gum operation, they didn't have unlimited amounts of money. They didn't have, you know, a fully developed network. They didn't have any of that. But what they were able to broadcast to people is a mission, a great sense, a definitive sense of mission. And we had the people understanding that the political game, there's a way you have to play it. And you just can't think, well, I'll do this and it will work. No, it has to be within the context of what the game is and how it is played. I think the Green Party is a good example of a burgeoning movement, which should be much further ahead than it is now. And my frustration with it is that it keeps repeating the same errors that account for its lack of progress at the polls. It's got to hunker down and do some very hard internal auditing, because you have to inspire people. You have to inspire them. You have to teach them as you reach them. And you can't take the position that, well, I'm absolutely not going. I mean, let me ask you, what could possibly have been the divide that, how deep could it have been that the Sanders people wouldn't talk with the Green Party? And in the end, they blew a fantastic opportunity there. A beautiful opportunity to advance the cause that they both are fighting for, and the larger cause of signaling the emergence of a powerful third force. Look what they did. They just blew an opportunity here. Because they believed, you know, they dug their heels in, we believe this, and the other folks said, we believe that. In the meantime, they had so much more in common than they had differences, but they never got that. And there was time to do it. There was time to make that move. Huh?
To me, that actually begs the question then, is it up to them to reach out to us, or is it up to the voters to make the leap over to the Green Party, given these mistakes that they're making? Whose responsibility do you think that is?
At the end, it has to do with leadership. The leadership has to convey the message. The leadership has to be responsible. And that's why I said, when Bernie Sanders did what he did, fire him publicly and immediately, just simply to get people to understand that you're taking this movement seriously and you won't tolerate betrayal. you now have an opportunity to enter into coalitions with whomever you choose. But there you have the 13 million votes are still in the balance. Where are they going? Somebody has 13 million votes, or somebody has sway over 13 million votes, and yet the Sanders movement does not exist as an official independent movement in the political arena. It is not on the ballot in any state. But you have the Green Party, which is on the ballot in 45 states. There's a pragmatic, my point is, there's a pragmatic reason, a pragmatic approach that you can take to salvage a bad situation. You have 13 million votes, but it has no value at this moment, and it's up for grabs by you-know-who. The Democratic Party is going to end up getting them because people are not enlightened enough. The leadership is not visionary enough to overcome these hurdles and to make fast changes, and they don't have an organizational structure that would support these endeavors. And this is part of the whole idea of building, organizational building. When you're running and you say, well, this is our fifth time running, it means you've had four times previous experience, wouldn't you say? You should kind of know a thing or two. So why are you repeating the same awful mistakes? And why are we forgiving them? No. Somebody's got to answer for this, because in the end, even if, let's say, the Green Party, as the Green Party, you know, the one unit Green Party, does not succeed, and it will not win that number of votes this time around from the way things look, but it certainly would have been very close to achieving the great hurdle, which is achieving going way beyond the 3% or the 2% of the vote with the remnants of the Sanders movement, and everybody would benefit from that. And then after the election, you come up with some way of operating so that you build on that for the next time. But they dropped the ball. They dropped the ball miserably. Not just the Green Party. The Sanders people dropped the ball here, and they have some accounting to do because they created confusion without being clear about what the objectives were supposed to be. Thanks so much for your call, Paul. Enjoyed talking with you from Los Angeles.
Thank you.
Big money.
Hi, Eutrice. So wonderful to hear your voice.
Thank you.
In this wilderland. And I will say this. I'm so grateful that CP called me and told me to tune in to you, as I'm a strong talk show host listener over the years, 25 years to be exact, ever since the Rodney King beating. But more important, what happened?
Yes, I don't know, but I'm hearing you.
Okay. But more importantly, I'm one of those that have ran for office five times. I've ran for the city council here in Inglewood, California. I ran for the Board of Supervisors. I ran once for the United States Congress and another time for the United States Congress this past year. So I'm one of those brothers like no other. I'm a strong community activist, leader, and problem solver at the age of 66. And I'm here to say to you that you're absolutely right. We've got to be able to have a plan B. If plan A doesn't work, we have to have a plan B. So what I'm saying to you is that one of my platforms is to redirect Powerball, Super Lotto, Mega Lotto on a statewide ballot measure to not only recreate manufacturing and clean energy jobs, but also, Eutrice, to be used as a supplemental income to existing jobs.
So let me ask you before you go any further, are you running now?
I will be running in 2 years. The guy who's going to take this seat is Isidore Hall.
and he hasn't stood tall at all in all the seats that he's held over the past years. For instance, they allowed the AR-15s in Compton, California, to be allowed. The officers who are K through 12th grader, the officers who deal with the campuses of K through 12th grade are allowed to have the AR-15s. The problem that I'm having, Utrice, is that not one of them have been tested, and all of these officers have come from the military. And you know as well as I do that they all have or are alleged to have had post-traumatic stress syndrome. So my question
let
was...
I understand where you're going. However, we want to go for the big picture here. We'll get to the smaller picture and distill down. But I'm concerned that we're not getting an understanding of the big picture being what is our organizational structure? What is the aim? What is the objective? What are we supposed to be focusing on as soldiers in the battle? Okay, the leadership should say, this is what we're going to do. Boom, 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 boom. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all moving in the same direction.
But well, I agree with that.
We have a lot of things that are being applied that have really mixed results and mostly negative results. But they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. You can't run a campaign and fund a campaign and you know, get your point across and do all of this stuff all at the same time in an election year. The fact that we have presidential races every 4 years should not be a surprise. It means that if you're going to run in year four, years one, two, and three are serious organizational years. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, well, either you're planning to fail or you're failing to plan. And Albert Einstein said it best, the quickest way to insanity is to keep doing the same thing the same way and expect a different result. And that's why I started out sharing with you that for us, it's the economy, it's jobs. Dr. Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy said it best, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Well, that's what you're advocating here. That's what you're promoting with the listeners that are listening to you now. What are you going to do? What can you bring to the table that is going to help us, help each other, help ourselves forever? And all
but
I
I'm
can
saying
say
something
to you,
more. I am well, saying say- the people clearly they have a long history of doing exactly what is asked of them. You asked me to elect Barack Obama? Great, we elected Obama. You asked me to elect person A? We go ahead and elect person A. So the people, the problem is not with the people. The problem is with the leadership that has to be absolutely clear about what the battle plans are, where they hope to go, what they want to achieve, the order of priorities. Who are they going to be talking with? You can't, in this day and age, as a small party, you can't possibly think that you are going to win the presidency of the United States. Now, let's start there. It's not going to happen. So immediately, in my view, you're talking about a coalition effort. Where's the evidence of a coalition effort? Let's talk about a coalition effort, and let's talk about that 3 years, or 4 or 5, 6 years ago. Even if the Green Party were to win quite a few million votes, it still loses. But if you took the foothold that it has, and you combine it with the footholds that somebody else has, some other party, you begin to move in a direction that makes sense. And you don't fritter away your political currency. This is my point. We have to get serious with the leadership here Mm-hmm. And so, look, you folks need to reevaluate how you're approaching this thing. It's not working. It hasn't been working. For all of the brilliance that you have, the great ideas that you have, and your political planks and your vision and all of that is fine. You clearly don't understand the political system. And therefore, you don't have a workable counter to it.
Well, a leader leads by example. And that's the key here. When you have a leader should lead by example. And the example that I'm giving you today is that each time you go to the 7-Eleven stores and see those numbers, Powerball, Super Lotto, Mega Lotto, know that that is your money and that you should have a portion of that money every time there's a jackpot winner of the other half of the winner's money. That money is not going to the schools, and that should be a part of your money forever until you die. And that's the reason why we should have a slice of that pie.
Thank you very much for your call today and for offering your thoughts so freely. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I appreciate everyone who has called, and I appreciate the fact that you are willing to face some realities here. This is my whole thing. I what people do, as long as they're clear, clarity. You got to be clear about what your objectives are and how you're going to achieve them. And you can't just take it as a kind of ceremony, a ceremonial run, go through all of this preparation and everything, but you don't have a sense that you're operating with an entirely different intelligence. We have to get to that point in every aspect of our lives. We can't depend on the system. We're clear the system is not beneficial to us. So we have to devise something different, and we have to operate differently, and we have to hold ourselves to a very high standard. That's very, very important. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program and the ideas offered here. We'll see each other tomorrow. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.